Cody Coates.
Joe Caiati. Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. So immediately after our show came out last week, Twitter proved us wrong.
Yeah, it was one of those unfortunate weeks where we just recorded on a Wednesday. We usually record on a Thursday. And it was one of those Wednesdays where, news decided to prove us wrong for the remainder of the week. So by the time our show came out on Friday, I had to throw a disclaimer in there. And the first thing, as you mentioned, is Twitter. Me and you were discussing the recent news of the Dick Costolo being fired and Jack being the new interim CEO, and we were kind of scolding them for not talking about any future things down the pipeline. And then BuzzFeed, out of all outlets, gets an exclusive. Matt Honan specifically, and I thought this originally was a leak or a scoop, as we would call it, but this appears to be a Twitter-backed story. It seems like BuzzFeed.
Funny that Twitter announces things not via Twitter but via BuzzFeed.
Yeah, that alone I found interesting, and it's also just proves that BuzzFeed is becoming more dominant when it comes to news, especially in the tech space. They now have a pretty strong tech team, and this is not the first exclusive they were given, but this was a big one. So Twitter has a project that they've been working on for some time, and in Twitter they've been calling it Project Lightning. And essentially, this is the homepage overhaul that everyone's been waiting for, even though they kind of just overhauled the homepage. And it's also kind of Twitter finally recognizing that they have become a very big source for news discovery. And they're, for the first time, going to be allowing people who don't even have an account that visit Twitter.com to kind of discover what's going on currently, and they'll have different sections. So I think that this will be a very popular destination during award shows, for an example. So if this is released before Oscar season next year, I think this will be a very popular destination for people to land who aren't really Twitter fans, but they want to know what people are talking about online, but they don't want to sign up for an account. And I'm sure this is for conversion, so they can convert people into users. But what do you think? I mean, I find that this is a good step forward for them.
So I think it's good that Twitter's like doing something new. I think I lamented about this maybe one of the times that we were complaining about Twitter, that Twitter needs to be something more than just a timeline of tweets of people you follow. And this is really interesting. I mean, this is great. Like, you mentioned award shows, but I think of the election that's coming up. This would be a great place to, you know, just twitter.com/, you know, election 2016. And then you can see just what everyone in the world is talking about, not just people that you have clicked the follow button on. And like you said, you also have to have an account and click the follow button. And now you can actually kind of see what is just going on. And it really opens up Twitter to be like a news source. I mean, you use Twitter mostly to get all your news, right?
Absolutely.
And so now we'll be able to go on to Twitter and see what are the kind of trending, I don't know what they're call them the lightning stories, and see like what is happening and what are people talking about. Because I think this happens with tech people. Like, we kind of live, or I would say this Apple nerd podcast world, like you and I live on Twitter in this kind of little microcosm of nerd Mac podcasting, right? Like, we follow a lot of the same people and we see a lot of the same conversations. And I think if you don't like start following outside of that, you kind of, Twitter loses its power, and you end up just living in this little bubble, which is great. But the power of Twitter is being able to see everything in the world and everyone kind be able to chime in. And I think Lightning's really cool. I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to give me a reason to finally use the Twitter app.
And I think you had a really good idea of pointing people to a specific URL. So yeah, twitter.com election 2016 or twitter.com Oscars 2016. That's even more specific. And I think that they will bring a lot of abandoned users. Not even like users who've never even, you know, went to the twitter.com website. Like I mentioned last week, they have a staggering number, and I believe it's 1 billion people have tried and then abandoned Twitter. So if they can get just a fraction of those people back with this lightning tool, I think that this is going to be a big moneymaker for them. This will they'll be able to do a lot of teaming up with advertisers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It happens to me all the time. Like, I want to log in. I want to just go to Twitter and, like, look at someone's profile or look at something. And it's always behind this login wall. And I don't remember what my login is because I've just always been signed in with Tweetbot. And I forget. And then, you know, if I'm on a new computer or something, then I essentially am like, well, I guess I'm not looking at Twitter today. And them finally making it so you don't have to sign in with an account, I think, is super nice.
And speaking of making money, they also seem to be testing out something very similar to what we've been seeing with other social media outlets. So, for example, Pinterest, who's added the buy it button. So Twitter is following suit, and they're experimenting with different pages for people to kind of navigate in. Say something comes across their timeline, and someone posts an Amazon link or something to that effect, Twitter can kind of parse that information and they can make it readily available for you to purchase within the app. And I think that if they partner with Apple Pay on this, I think that that's going to be a really neat feature for someone who just sees it, they lay their fingerprint down, they buy it, and they're still within Twitter.
I think this is really cool because it's like Amazon reviews plus. Because you can think of like searching for a product, and rather than going through the reviews, you can see like what are people saying about this product right now. Like, or instead of having someone review a product that is ages old, you know, their review is like an old review, and now you can see what people are actually talking about right now about the product. And the same thing for apps too. Like, you go onto an app and like you read the reviews and like, oh, this app is like super, it hasn't been updated in a while, no one's really talking about it. And you can see that on Twitter, where like, well, there's no tweets about this app that you're looking at on its product page. That's what I see this being most useful for. I mean, I guess I could buy things, but yeah, I see it more just seeing what the same thing with news of like people talking about products, and you can see like, oh, my friends mentioned it, or ooh, Taylor Swift, follow up with her later in the show. Taylor Swift is talking about, you know, X, Y, and Z product.
So moving on to other things that that came out after we recorded last week.
Man, that really just like last week, the news was just mad at us.
Absolutely. We definitely picked very interesting topics. So we did app picks last week, and my app pick was Weather Nerd. It's a new weather app, and I even mentioned Dark Sky, and I mentioned that I really only use it for push notifications of when it's going to rain. But then we're done recording, I sit down, I open up Twitter, and there I see it. Someone retweeted a blog post from Dark Sky. Dark Sky 5.0 update has just hit the App Store, and I'm reading all the features that it has, and I'm just kicking myself. The new Dark Sky update does some stuff that Weather Nerd did. So, for example, like I mentioned, Weather Nerd gave you a push notification every morning. Now Dark Sky has that, and Dark Sky has a better visualization of your day to day and your week. So now I'm really conflicted, Cody, and now it's like, I feel like I'm cheating on apps.
You have to choose.
Yeah, I have to choose, and
you can only use one weather app.
I mean, if you had one of those gun to your head situations, it's going to be Dark Sky for me. Dark Sky, I think, especially with this update, it's the whole package. So I would say if you want my stamp of approval for one app that you should purchase for weather, I'm going to give it to Dark Sky.
So another app that we talked about last week was Kiwi for Gmail, and you were at the launch party.
Indeed, I was, Cody. So I mentioned it very briefly last episode that I was going to be at the launch party. But I have a funny story. I did call you after the launch party, but maybe the listeners will be interested. So the launch party was cool. It was in this it almost seemed like a shared workspace kind of thing, like WeWork. You know, we got there, kind of mingling for a little bit. I brought my wife with me. And they were going to have a presentation. They also streamed it online simultaneously, which was nice. So I'm sitting in my seat, you know, everyone's kind of getting settled in. And the announcer comes on. And she's like, you know, welcome everybody. Thanks for coming out to the Kiwi for Gmail launch. She's like, you know, who's a Kickstarter backer? People are like raising their hands. Some people were raising their hands. And they're like, oh, you know, how else did you hear about our app? Someone two seats down from me screams out and they said, a podcast. She's like, oh, great, a podcast. And then the person proceeds to say, diagnostics and usage. I looked to my left I looked to my left to my wife because I wanted to make sure I wasn't kind of daydreaming, because like obviously that would be a great thing. Like, I'm daydreaming, someone calls out my podcast name, and then she looks at me and I'm like, and then I looked to my right, and everyone kind of saw the fast movements I made, and I was like, "That's my podcast." thanks to listener Victor, his Twitter handle is Prosper Vic. It was really nice meeting a listener who is not like my mom or my friends. I thought that was pretty great. I'll also link up my review, so now that it's out I could tell you that they gave me a copy of Kiwi for Gmail a couple weeks back to review, and I'm really enjoying it. It is a very simple app, but the stuff that it does is really, really nice. And if you haven't seen the icon alone is just gorgeous. Really, really well designed. Cody, did you have a chance to look at it this week?
So I have not. And unfortunately, that comes... Did you get the email like, hey, here's your key for Kiwi?
Yeah, were you a Kickstarter backer? I didn't know that.
No, I paid for it. I did the like pre-order? $5 preview or whatever.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But so I got the email and I was like, oh yes, I'm gonna go ahead and download this and do it right away. You know, it just came out, so I was super excited, hearing all these great things from you. And then the email wouldn't open.
The email or the link?
The email.
Oh no. I received my email. I was checking the timestamps. So it was like 5:57 in the morning. I wasn't up that early, but I checked and that's when it came in.
So they sent a follow-up email about it and they apologized, but when they sent out the email, they put the header was too big, because rather than sending it out one by one, they sent one mass email to everyone.
Oh, my goodness.
I got the email and I tried to open it up, and because it has so many people in the like two CC fields,
you could see everyone's email.
Yes, and mail wouldn't.
Oh goodness,
mail wouldn't open because the header was so big. It actually, I couldn't see who was on the list because I couldn't open the email.
Holy moly!
Yeah, so they sent out an apology email. It was actually a really well worded email apologizing, unfortunately, my fervor for downloading it has waned and I haven't done it yet, but it's on the plan for this weekend to redo my email.
So you now have a new email with the link, correct?
Yes. They followed up with an email saying sorry and then also sent a new link to everyone. And what's funny is, you know, having worked at, I'm sure you do this all the time, like whenever something goes wrong with your phone, you go into genius mode, right?
And
I'm
like, oh, of course.
Okay. So, okay, I can't open this email. What is it? Okay, let me quit mail. Open it up again. Nope. Okay, let me force quit mail. Nope. Let me restart my phone. Nope. Let me hard restart my phone. Nope. And I was like, what the hell is this? And I was like, I guess I just can't open this email. This is so weird. And then a few hours later, I got the follow-up email.
So the only quirk that I had was when you get the email, it asks you, do you want to do the U.S. App Store, the International App Store? So I picked the U.S. App Store, of course, and it sent me a follow-up email, and it said, click this to redeem it. So I clicked it, and it was kind of hanging. But like going back to genius mode and knowing how Apple redeems their stuff, I saw the redemption code in the URL slug. So I just copied the redemption code out of the URL slug, opened up the Mac App Store, clicked redeem, pasted it. I was good to go, which of course, you know, only nerds would know how to do that. But yeah, I look forward, once you do get it kind of set up, I look forward to hearing your review on it and, you know, what your thoughts on it, since you're a pretty heavy Gmail user.
So before we start with this week's main topic, I do want to give a teaser for something I'll be talking about next week. I got a coin in the mail. Do you remember that? The Kickstarter coin?
Oh my goodness, you finally got one.
Finally got it, like 8 years later, after the Kickstarter delayed again and again. And
wait, is this the beta version or is this the final
version?
No, this
is the final one. Final one.
Oh my goodness.
I had completely forgot about the damn thing. And then I went and I opened my mailbox and I had this, like, I had like a little box in the mail and I was like, this is weird. Like, I don't remember if I ordered anything. I don't remember what this is. So I open it and then it's this nice little white box and it says coin on it. I'm like, oh, this thing that I ordered a long time ago and completely forgot about. But so I finally got it in the mail. I'm going to be setting it up. It's another thing to do this weekend. I'm going to set that up and, try using it next week and, hear about that. Do you remember when that thing came out or when they announced it?
I was just about to say that came out. That was announced so long ago. That was over 2 years ago. We were both working still at Apple. I remember you asking me if I pre-ordered it, and I was like, no, I didn't pre-order it. And then you know, a year later, Apple Pay gets announced, and then people were just – they kind of wrote it off.
You know, that's the funny part is, like, I'm going to have to actively find a place to use the credit card. I mean, I use it at, like, my credit card at, like, the little convenience stores, but that's about it because, like – all my groceries and like household stuff, I pay for all of that with Apple Pay.
Well, we'll talk about this next week, but for the people who got the beta card, they sent out like a pre-released version card. There was a lot of mixed reviews, but I think it's time to enter the Swift saga. What do you think?
The Swift saga. Yeah, I mean, this was the major Apple news for the week. Just Taylor Swift and Eddie Q going at it on Twitter. And Tumblr.
Yes, exactly. Who knew that Taylor Swift was a avid Tumblr user? Now that I know she has a Tumblr, I was kind of scrolling through her posts, and she's like, and I'm pretty sure it's her who's actually, it's not like a PR
person. It seems like her. It seems like something she would do.
But she comes out with a very well-written post. And a couple things right off the bat that I like about the post. A, she stated in it, like, listen, guys, this is, I don't need the money. Like, I'm Taylor Swift. Like, I'm glad she didn't come at it like, oh, woe is me, I'm not getting paid for the music. She's like, listen, I can tour, I can make bank. She's like, but, you know, this is for the people who have just signed their first record label with a minor record label. They're getting paid chump change, and they put out their first single, and for 3 months, someone's going to be able to listen to that single or entire album, and they're not going to see a dime from it. And that was her argument.
So where do you fall on this? So Taylor Swift is mad, rightfully so, I think, because Apple isn't going to pay artists in the 3 month trial for Apple Music, which is a big cut for artists, because not only are they not getting paid for those 3 months while people are listening to their music, but people aren't going to be paying for the other services that they normally were listening to music on. And so now it's like negative money for artists. But also, on the other hand, like, Apple was essentially just trying to save quite a bit of cash over 3 months while launching its new service. So are you on Q's side or are you on Taylor's side?
No, and I'm on Taylor's side because a couple of things kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Like, I'm pretty sure this was in public knowledge before she put out the letter on how that 3-month trial was going to happen, and I'm assuming she found out through her record label how this was going to happen. So, you know, kudos to her for kind of calling Apple out. And some people are saying that they...
Well, she did the same thing with Spotify.
Exactly.
Like, she's done this. She's been very vocal about artist payment, which is a great thing because artists get paid really crappily.
And some people are saying that Jimmy Iovine may have had something to do with this of what, you know, negotiating, you know, zero money for artists for the 3 months. But I find that I lean more towards the Taylor Swift side. And like I said, she really came at it in a attitude that she's looking out for the up and coming artists. And with piracy and with free streaming tiers and with Pandora and things of that nature. I don't know if you heard this, but like Pharrell's Happy, the song Happy got streamed on Pandora, you know, millions of times, and he only made like, it was like an absurd little amount of money. Like, I don't know if it was like $60,000 or $16,000. I'll have to try to find the link. But like the streaming, you know, money that these artists receive after the record labels take their cut, it's pretty rough. So it's Father's Day. Let's rewind to the day it happened. It's Father's Day, and poor Eddie Q is now making calls,
just, you know, trying to hang out with his kids. he's dealing with all this Taylor Swift.
Calls Taylor Swift, like, personally. He calls Taylor Swift personally. He's not only doing that. After he tweets, he's calling journalists to do phone interviews. This is on like a Sunday evening. He tweeted this out at like 9 o'clock, or something like that. I remember it was late at night. He says, "Listen, Apple's going to reverse the decision." And I mean, I think now it's come out that, you know, they're still not paying a ton of money. They're paying like comparable streaming
0.2 money cents.
That other, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a PR spin as far as that goes. This has unintentionally created a lot of PR for Apple Music's launch on the 30th.
I think that Apple was kind of on the shady side for like not paying artists, but they've handled it really well. I mean, reversing it, like, it's not like they don't have the money and that they can't pay for those 3 months. I think they were probably just trying to save some of their money, and that's how they have so much money, because they save money like this. But being called out on it, and I think it was handled fairly gracefully, and hey, it's great news for us customers. I mean, we can feel good about artists getting paid, and 1989 will be on Apple Music. That's the best part, right?
And yeah, and that broke today, and I'm wondering if that was discussed when she and Eddie Q spoke on Sunday, but finally the terms seemed right. But today Taylor Swift tweets that it's going to be on Apple Music. That is the first streaming service it's ever been on. And then she followed up with a couple of tweets. She says, you know, in case you're wondering if this is some exclusive deal that you've seen Apple do with other artists, it's not. And I think she's referring to Beyonce's, like, you know, exclusive with Apple.
Pharrell has a song.
Oh, yes. And Pharrell.
Beyonce is with Tide, right?
She's with Tidal, but remember...
Tidal. I don't even remember what the product's called.
She dropped a random album that no one knew about, you know, a year or two ago. And she just says that, you know, it's the first time it's felt right in her gut to stream the album. So that is another huge win for Apple Music on the 30th. People for 3 months are going to be able to listen to Taylor Swift's album for free for the first time ever.
I think we all saw how that went, of like, Taylor Swift raised a stink. Apple was like, okay, we'll fix it. We were wrong. We did it. And then there's no way she could have been like, and I'm still not going to put 1989 on Apple Music. Like, I think her hand was kind of forced on that one. Are you excited about the Apple Music launch? I know you're a Google Music user, so are you excited?
Not really. I mean, I'm excited.
That does not sound convincing.
I'm excited to have 3 months free access to pretty much any almost any song in the world. Absolutely. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm more interested in kind of just seeing how, like you said, I'm more interested in, like, Beats 1. Like, they're talking about how, like, they got more radio DJs for Beats 1. They're having exclusive interviews. I think that Beats 1 may steal the show, in my opinion. I think that's going to be a big thing for Apple. No, I'm not particularly, amped up for it. But I will be using it.
I am excited. Something I actually noticed Monday is when I noticed it. I'm not exactly sure when it happened, but there's the iTunes radio stations.
Yeah.
Like in the music app, you can go to radio or on iTunes. That has been changed. It used to have at the top, like, there was a Pepsi one and there was like a Disney one. And, iTunes top 40 alternative and blah, blah, blah. And it's been replaced with this all city radio on the floor sound system and mixtape. And then 4 workout anthem ones. And those are the only ones listed on the radio, like the featured stations that Apple makes. And I listened to a couple of them. They're actually pretty good. So better than the previous iTunes radio stations that were there. So I'm hoping those are kind of a precursor to the playlists that will be on Apple Music.
Apple would be stupid to not use their human curated playlists, like the resources from that they're using for Apple Music. They would be stupid not to use that for iTunes Radio, because that's just kind of a primer for anybody who's kind of getting into Apple. And I mean, that will sell people on upgrading to Apple Music, you know, after they use iTunes Radio and realize, you know, how great the song selection is.
Yeah, it was just interesting to see the little icons up at the top that have, like, been the same since iTunes Radio came out. They changed on Monday, and I was like, whoa, what happened? What are all these new weird radio stations? So other news this week was T-Mobile announced a new kind of, I think it's essentially a response to, like, AT&T's, what is AT&T's plan called?
Next.
So it's kind of a response to AT&T's Next plan, and they're calling it Jump on Demand, which lets you get a leasing program for your phone, your mobile phone through T-Mobile, where you can change out your phone for any new phone 3 times a year. Does that sound exciting to you?
I'm not sure if it's exciting to me because, I mean, there's only one new iPhone every year. And
no, there's 2. There's the 6 and the 6 Plus. You could try out both. Was Mike right?
Wow, that is true. So in theory, if you really wanted to, if you were a real nerd, you can try the iPhone in both sizes, and you can
still
try
an Android for like
an Android and or a Windows phone if you just want to try it on for size. I don't know. You know, I watched John Legere's video on it, you know, the CEO, and he's saying, like, nothing. He keeps saying, like, this is, like, upfront. There's no shady back dealings. But, like, how are they making money? Like, that's really the question.
Well, this is it. You don't get a new phone when you trade that in, because you don't own the phone. When you lease the phone, it's not yours. You have to give it back to T-Mobile when your contract ends. Like, that's my biggest thing of why I don't like any of the AT&T one or this one. And I think Verizon also has one too, of like, I want to own the phone. Like, I like my Apple device and I want to keep it. I have no plans of like giving it back to the carrier once my contract is up.
So for the people like you and me who usually sell their phones, if we got into this plan, we would not be able to sell the phone secondhand. You're kind of beholden to their thing. So they're getting a lot more phones to refurbish and resell on their end, which I'm assuming is more profitable on their end.
Yeah, I mean, when it says upgrade, it means like trade-in. You essentially swap your phone, what phone you had, you give it to T-Mobile, and then T-Mobile, you get to pick out a new one. It's not like you get to keep the phone, and then you don't end up with 3 phones in your pocket at the end of the year. I mean, it's the idea of being able to test out all the cool new phones that come out is nice, but I want to keep my iPhones.
Yeah, and the other thing is like, you know, back then all the carriers kind of fought on like who had the most coverage and such, but it's kind of settled down, and like, I'm scared to switch carriers. Like, I'm on AT&T, I'm not saying they're the best in the world, but you know, the coverage for me is great. Like, I don't kind of want to mess with that. I don't want to have to be locked in. B, just to go through the hassle of switching carriers and getting the phone numbers transferred over. I've come to the point where, I mean, unless AT&T does something so asinine that really just pisses me off, I would be content with being their customer, you know, for the remainder of, you know, my days using a mobile phone. I don't know.
I mean, I think the thing is, like, most of the carriers, I mean, I told this when I worked at the Apple store, and people would say, oh, should I change carriers? Should I not? I've heard T-Mobile's good. I've heard T-Mobile sucks. I've heard Verizon's good. I've heard Verizon sucks. Same with AT&T and Sprint. I always said, like, meh, they're pretty much all the same when it comes down to it. Like, they're all nickel and diming you for data. They, you know, have these crazy contracts. And I think they've tried to differentiate themselves and do things like this jump on demand and the 250 megabytes of free data, but they still seem like a carrier, a normal carrier, just like AT&T or Verizon. Maybe it's a little cheaper, but yeah, I don't really see none of the carriers jump out as like, that's a really good carrier. They all just kind of seem the same and all kind of crappy. So I guess they have to do things like this of like shove, you know, phones in your face for free to have you switch over. And I think, and what's so funny, like how they're competing of, I think it was T-Mobile who started it of like, we'll pay your, you know, whatever it costs for you to transfer over from AT&T, we'll pay your cancellation fee, we'll do it. And I think they all do that now. So essentially, yeah, you can just
pretty much
hop between whatever carrier you want at any time, and you get to keep your phone number because that's a law. So, you know, it's kind of silly the hoops that they're jumping through to get customers.
So I've just been thinking about something in particular as of late. Because, you know, Google in particular, some people have, you know, a problem with using Google stuff. Because Google, you know, since the beginning of when they were just a search company, they sold to advertisers. And they would use your search terms and your data. And they would, you know, sell to advertisers. And that's how they made their money. And they've obviously expanded drastically since search. I know some people, maybe not personally, but maybe just through the internet, that are personalities that are, some people are really adamant of just not using anything Google. And they, you know, obviously cite privacy concerns, but, you know, as you know, I like Google products. I love Google Music. I love Google Photos now. And I mean, I guess my question is like, what are people afraid of with Google? Because Google has not done anything to betray my trust as of yet. I don't know if you have had any incidents, but like, what are people so concerned about? Do you have any thoughts?
Well, neither one of us can say anything for all of, you know, Google's users, but just from my personal perspective, it is kind of scary to give them all of your data and they essentially can do with it as they please. I think every time a Google service comes out, I usually see an article too about like, and this is hidden in the terms and conditions of how they can use your data. I mean, one of the big things I remember was with Drive, of it said in the Drive terms and agreement of like, you put a photo in here, we can use it in our ads if we want. And I don't really think Google's ever done that, and they're reserving their legal right in case they want to. But I think it's just it's very unclear what they're doing with your data. And I think that comes down more to just the general public's inability to understand, you know, machine learning and, you know, computer inner workings and algorithms of like, yeah, it's metadata and it puts these things and yeah, it identifies you with all of these points of data and that's how it recommends things. I don't think people, I think it's hard to, if you're not a nerd, I think it's hard to make the jump from, oh, well, Google's great and it gives me all this information and, you know, it knows exactly what I'm looking for when I search. And look, I only have to type in two letters and it gives me the exact right search result. I think it's hard to make the jump from that to how do they do that? Oh, they have to have all my data to do that? Why do they have to know everything about me? I think it's hard to make that trade-off when you aren't exactly sure of technically what's going on.
The thing is like, but on the other hand, Google is not stupid. They are a corporation and they are a business and their aim is to make money. So they, you know, for them to do something so outlandish and to do something that would betray their users, it would be the worst decision they've ever made because there would be a mass exodus. So,
I don't think they would. I think people are pretty entrenched. I mean, we don't really use the word search anymore. We use the word Google. I think it's hard to get out of that. Like, Google is a very, very core part of the internet nowadays. But it's just, it's scary to be giving away your privacy and for someone to know all of those things about you. And honestly, you really don't know what Google knows about you. And Google never really does anything overtly with your data. It's always hidden in an ad. And for people like us who have, you know, like ad banner blindness, it's hard even to see what Google really knows about us. And I think that's what's scary is just you don't really know what Google knows about you exactly. Like if you could get a printout that says like Google knows you are this tall and weigh this much and these are your favorite foods, this is your favorite color, you go here most often, like if you could get that data, I think people would be really uncomfortable with how much Google knows about them. But because we live in like this naive world where we don't really know what Google's doing, we know that Google knows everywhere we click and everything we search and pretty much everything we see on the internet, but we don't really know what they're doing with that. We only see the good sides. And there haven't been any bad sides yet, but I think just because it's hidden and we don't know what's there, there's an ease because, I mean, if Google sent you that report of like, hey, Joe, this is everything we know about you, you would feel a little uncomfortable reading that, right?
I think so. But I, on the other hand, now that I think about it, Google probably knows me better than any other person in the world because I use Gmail.
I like how you just personified Google.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? I didn't even mean to.
But it's true.
But like, I use Gmail. I search through Google. I now have all my photos in Google Photos. So Google knows where I were. Google knows where I was in certain times of the years and where I live. They have that metadata. They probably do know more about me than I probably remember about me.
Oh, yes, they do.
Absolutely. The thing is like,
they do cool things with it. Like, they do really cool stuff with it. Like, the stuff that Google comes up with to do with all of that raw data is amazing. It's just, I think people get anxious about all of that raw data about them being on a server owned by someone else. Like, it's not in your brain. It's on a computer brain somewhere in the world via the internet.
I don't know. It's something that I don't think we're going to have a clear answer on, but I just felt like it needed to be addressed because...
Well, I mean, with Google I/O just coming out, like, they did a lot of stuff with your data, you know, especially with photos and especially with on Android phones with Google, what is it, Google Now, what was that called?
Google Now on Tap.
Yeah, Google Now on Tap. That's also learns about you and knows a lot about you. And I think when all these things, like every new feature that comes out centers around data around you, you kind of have to start thinking about these things of like, how much data do I want to give Google for these features? I think actually, you know, listeners, if you want to send some feedback, we'd love to hear from you and like your thoughts on this and how you feel about Google. We'd love to hear like what you think about Google knowing a lot of things about you, but then also doing really cool stuff with that. You can reach out to me on Twitter at CP Coates or Joe.
Yeah, I'm at Joe Coyote, and I think this is probably a good point to wrap up the show. What do you think?
Yes.
So we do have a lot of links. As we always fail to do very often, we don't mention where people can find our show notes.
So. Hey, we mentioned it at the end, and that's what's important.
So where can people find our show notes, Cody?
Diagnosticsandusage.com/23.
Yeah, and you can all, on that website, you can also send us feedback through the feedback form. And if you have some spare time, we'd love to get some iTunes reviews. As Cody mentioned, we're available on Twitter. And you know what, Cody? We never mentioned the show's Twitter account, so I figured we'd do that this week. And that's at DAU Show. So you can always, if you're not really interested in what me and Cody are up to for the remainder of the week and you just want to kind of hit the show account up, that's where you'd go.
Or, you know, because you only have 140 characters, you got to save space. You can get both of us with at DAU Show.
Exactly. And I write at joecaiati.info. And that's going to be all for this week. So we will talk to you very soon. And Cody, I hope you have a great evening.
Bye.